This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rassland, today we have the return of, and I've been underselling him over these last few months and years. He, advertising veteran, he wanted us to call him, but he was actually, once upon a time, he was the youngest creative director in Kuala Lumpur. And one of the few local creative directors around.
Oh, 5,000 years ago, yes. No. Thank you for remembering.
And he is Vernon Adrian Among.
Hello, everybody.
Did I say Adrian?
Yes, you did.
Thank you.
Yeah, you did it right this time. Phew. Finally.
Right. And then we also have actor and producer, the star of the recent newest production of Gold Rain Hailstones by Jit Murad, Farah Rani.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, pleasure. Yeah. And also the politest person ever to be on this show.
And, I will second that.
And our three topics this week are, topic number one is the news these days. Topic number two is the women's national hockey team.
Yes.
And finally, topic number three is eco-anxiety. Oof. So, Vernon, the news these days.
Yes, sir. I want to talk about the news these days because the news these days is moving into an area that is kind of like questionable because of, I feel that since the news was in a way commodified by, you know, the existence of the establishment of CNN, you know, when advertising money started to move into funding news, it's kind of like become a horrible thing, especially these days in Malaysia, for instance. The news that we get, not just on mainstream media, but also on online media, they're just going for eyeballs. So clickbaity headlines that don't really tell you the truth of the matter, regurgitating of the same news on different websites. You can move to different kinds of news sources, but it's the same thing. And all they want to do is for you to just surf over and be on their websites so that they can have their impressions increased.
You know, so therefore, back in the day, once upon a time,
well, back
the news was better, is what you're saying?
Well, the news wasn't driven by a need to have an audience. The news was there to inform people.
But at 8 o'clock in the evening.
Yes.
And then after that would be Star Trek.
It was like a notice board, you know, outside your lift door, telling you the weather and the latest incidences in town, the latest government announcements. But now it's kind of like moved into like looking at people's private lives and stuff like that. And just churning out, you know, stuff that people kind of like enjoy. So it's moved into entertainment more than anything else. And I see that reflected in how the news now has got a lot of, has been subject of parody. Like if you look at the latest kind of stand-up comedy or comedy shows like Trevor Noah's The Daily Show, his co-stars are all referred to as correspondents. And they jump onto what are topics of the time and they make fun of those topics. They have fun with it. And I think that is kind of like a reaction.
That's pernicious. You're saying that's a
Well,
eating into our souls.
Well, what they do is great because it makes us then look at the real news a little bit more critically. Right?
So, Farah, what do you think about the news these days?
I agree. I get most of my news from late night TV, from from Trevor Noah and The Daily Show. And,
what's your Malaysian news? I mean, they don't normally.
Well, Malaysian news, I see, that's something I kind of want to work on. I'm considering, I'm talking to Charmaine and Jen Han, and I think they've also considered doing sort of a late night satirical news show like Weekend Update.
Yeah.
And I think... And you're right, Vernon. It's the news that we get online. They're entertainment. It's someone tak pakai tudung or someone just, you know, it's not important. Things that we don't need to know.
Exactly.
And the people who are telling us what we need to know are comedians.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the worst newspapers in the whole wide world is a British newspaper called The Daily Mail. And I was looking at the list of the most popular websites in Malaysia. And I discovered that the Daily Mail, this is a couple of years ago, the Daily Mail was like number 30 or something. It was really high in Malaysia.
A UK newspaper.
So people, Malaysians think that that's real news or a credible source.
Well, not entirely, because what they do, and I think this follows on from Vernon's point, is that they have a lot of celebrity news. And it's very salacious.
Yes.
You know, Britney Spears in sexy skirt scandal, right? And then when you do click it, it's like, well, it's just not really true. But once you're in, you're in.
Yep. Yep.
Then you start going down the rabbit hole of the Daily Mail's anti-immigrant, essentially racist, highly conservative, but fascist storytelling.
Yep.
And it becomes very persuasive.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the front window is... It's just celebrity news. I mean, what can be wrong? Where's the harm in that? But once you get inside the store, it's pure fascism.
You know, as you speak, I start to think about a little kind of like a story way back in, I think it was the 80s. Remember there was this Malay magazine called Mastika.
Mastika.
Yeah. Well, it used to be a highbrow literary magazine.
No.
Yes, it started out as that. But then they decided that they'd go just a little pedestrian.
A little?
A little. They started a little. And then they found out that the readership spiked up. And so they went the whole hog. And that's where they are today.
Huh. Because so, but that then tells the lie to your argument at the beginning. This is as old as the hills then. There was clickbait before there were even clicks.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, it's been a slippery slide. Yeah. Slope. Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well,
now it's gotten to the point where I think it's a bit sad.
Well, I mean, just to give a bit of historical perspective, British newspapers throughout the centuries, certainly in the 1930s, were famous for being, well, you know, not even close to speaking the truth. It was just whatever's the best story. If it bleeds, it leads.
Reminds me of Christine, this American, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this journalist named Christine, who shot herself on national television as like a protest.
When was this?
I want to say the 80s. I watched a documentary about that. Oh, no. They made a movie based on this woman's life.
She shot herself dead.
She shot herself dead. Well, she didn't die immediately. What? She was because she was protesting the fact that they were just
the news was getting bad.
The news was getting treated, if it bleeds, really, yeah. It leads. So she was really. I mean, of course, she had some mental health issues as well. But she shot herself in national television in the States. I want to say the '80s.
I'll have to Google this.
I'm gonna have to Google this. How do I not know this
Christine.
Story?
So Rebecca Hall plays her in the biopic.
Right. So, Vernon, just to wrap up, the news telling, you're saying, is bad.
Yes.
Surely the news itself is just as bad as it ever was.
No, I mean, like, I think public broadcasting stations, media, usually has a better take on what really is the news because they are not driven to getting advertisers. If you know what I'm saying.
I don't know. RTM was always, I think it had to be the second story, had to be the Minister of Information today.
Well, that's
did
because
this.
They had a political agenda of sorts. Right. And that doesn't help either. So we need to, what is it? Cleave away political ownership of media, for one, as well as commercial interest from, you know, at least some of the media. So we get views that are not clouded by the need to get many people, you know, to sensationalize it.
So it must neither be owned by the public nor by the private sector. So who the hell owns the news in your...
The journalists, the real soldiers
on the
front lines bringing us information about...
Isn't Awani doing a good job? I mean, I don't have a TV, but from what I see, Awani is doing a good job at relaying the news.
Yes.
And not being sensationalized. But who owns Awani is owned by
Astro.
I suppose, yeah?
Yep.
Depends on... Just to wrap up then, do you see any good news in the news? I mean, is there a silver
lining? I think we just need to resort to documentaries to inform us and educate us.
Right. And comedians.
And, you know, comedians. Yep.
Yeah. So moving on though, topic number two, by the way, Farah, your little list of people who want to do this Daily Show type thing. Interesting that neither Vernon nor myself were on that list, but anyway.
No, because Charmaine had mentioned that they had already talked about it.
Yeah. Anyway, so moving on, topic number two, the Malaysian women's hockey team.
Yes, I am personally sick of the news, so I want to talk about something that I think deserves some attention. The Malaysian women's hockey team, they are 22nd in the world.
Whoa.
The men's team ranks 13th in the world, but they are now playing the FIH series hockey in Ireland, Northern Ireland at the moment. Mm-hmm. And in the first match, Ireland
right this
beat
minute.
Them. Right this minute. Oh, yeah, okay. they just played France yesterday.
Oh, so much for me being. Yeah.
Yeah. So more people need to know about this. So they lost the first match against Ireland 2-1, but in the second match, and this gives me great pleasure to say, they beat Singapore. We beat Singapore 12-0.
Whoa!
Annihilated.
You go.
Them. And practically everyone in the team scored. And I am.
Everyone in the team scored.
Practically. Well, I mean, there are 10.
The goalkeeper. Yeah, the goalkeeper, maybe not.
So I'm going to name them because I think they're national heroes.
Okay.
Go on.
Nuraini Rashid scored 3 goals. Siti Zulaika Hussein scored 2. And 1 goal each for the following players: Hanis Nadia On, Surizan Awang Noh, Kirandeep Kaur, Noor Maizatul Hanim Shafi, Fazila Sylvester, Noor Faiza Sayauti, and Noor Sharina Shabuddin. They all scored goals against Singapore.
Not a Sarani name in there.
Sylvester?
Sylvester? Kaur?
Well, Kaur's not a
well,
Sarani
name. Punjabi. Sylvester.
Sylvester, though?
Sylvester?
Oh.
Yes, yeah. And the coach's name is K. Dharmaraj. And earlier this week, we beat Czech Republic 3-1. And yesterday, we beat France 3-2.
Wow, you've been really following this.
Do you play hockey?
Have you ever played hockey?
I've never played hockey in my life. I don't know a lot about it, but it's fascinating to watch.
You've been watching it as well?
I've been watching it. Yeah, you can watch it live on the FIH website. So you just Google that and you can watch any of the matches. It's really great to see these Malaysian women, Malaysian women, some Tudong ladies, and just like killing it on the field.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can I ask, interesting thing, you kept saying we did this.
Yeah.
I have a real beam up on it about that. I think that, sure, they're Malaysians and I'm Malaysian, but I have no right to say we because they did it.
Sure.
It's their achievement.
Yeah.
And we're just
that's very
hopping
noble
on
of you.
To their successes.
That's right.
Well, no, but they're representing Malaysia.
They're representing us.
But they're representing themselves and their own skill.
Of course,
sure.
And I don't mean to take away from that at all, which is why I wanted to name each
of them. You
want
to name them?
But I do. It's a very odd way I'm showing my patriotism, right? I'm showing my.
It's not odd at all.
It's like I don't even know anything about hockey, and yet I'm like following the team.
So why has this gotten you so animated and excited?
Because there's such few good things to be proud about.
Yep.
Specifically, this is a Malaysian story, as it were, or is it just in the world these days?
And in Malaysia specifically, if we want to talk about what. Never mind. Like, well, let's talk about this good thing that's happened.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to talk about all the can I say that? I'm not going to say it. But all the bad things or the things that keep us up at night, let's talk about this thing that can maybe get you out of bed and watch a thing.
Yeah. This will lead on very much to what I'm going to be talking about later with eco-anxiety. But is that kind of like being an ostrich putting your head in the sand if you're not facing up to the reality of the situation? Or is this is just as much reality as anything else?
Of course it is.
Yeah. I mean, we can't... It's very easy to kind of be hide under the blanket with every bad thing that's going on in the world. But I'm not saying we should ignore those bad things, but I'm saying we should give time and our energy and attention to good things as well.
Vernon?
I agree with her completely.
Thanks, Vernon.
Yeah.
Are you a hockey player?
I used to be.
Yeah.
Were you the youngest hockey player in
in lower secondary school? Yeah.
I used to play as well in England. I felt it was my patriotic duty as a Malaysian in England to play hockey.
Did you beat them a lot or no?
Well, I mean, it's a team sport.
Oh, right.
I can't say I won.
Did you play badminton?
It was my patriotic duty to go play badminton as well.
Well, that's what I thought when I was in Australia when I went to high school there. Yeah. And I joined the badminton group and it was all just girls and I was the only guy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I was very bad at badminton. I was very good at hockey.
Trailblazing.
I know. Yeah.
I was very good at hockey, but I discover things about myself whilst playing hockey. You discover when you're in a sport... Your strengths and weaknesses. I'm not like 10 years old, but it's like, I felt
okay.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, but I suppose playing in a team would.
So, Farah, finally, are you galvanized by this to now want to participate in, not necessarily hockey, but something. Or are you a dedicated fan on the sidelines?
I'm a dedicated fan on the sidelines. But okay, no, I must say that they're now in the, I think tomorrow or later today is the semifinals with South Korea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's a test.
So yeah. If we win this match, then we would be going to the Olympic qualifiers in November.
Ah.
Which is pretty cool.
Okay, this would be the last match for Malaysia?
It's the semifinals. The next match is the semifinals.
Okay.
Because I don't know enough about this to say this with any articulation, but if we win this, then yes, then we can possibly make it to the Olympics.
Well, listeners, you, because this is, we're not actually coming to you live. So by the time you hear this, you will know if Malaysia has
won or not.
But Farah, you're going to be watching?
Yes, I will be. I'm going straight home after this.
There is.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's put a smile on your face and it's given you something to believe
to look
in. Forward to.
Yeah. Pity this isn't television because that smile is beaming.
Yes. Yeah. You should watch them play, guys. It's
fun. In the same week that Lee Chong Wei retired, we have another possible avenue for success.
For success, yeah.
Okay, well, from that happy story, we're going to go to something really miserable in part three. Eco-anxiety here on A Bit of Culture on BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Vernon Adrian Among, and Farah Rani. And now, topic number three, eco-anxiety or climate anxiety. So a friend of mine, she is one of the lucky people who, she lives in Kuala Lumpur and she has a garden. And she was telling me the other day how once upon a time she would, people would plant things in her garden and she'd be like, oh, it's a garden, whatever, it's nice, it looks nice. But recently, she says, she has found herself gripped by eco-anxiety. And so she's in her garden all the time, planting, willing these plants to grow. She goes around PJ planting trees. She picks up plastic on the streets
for
recycling. Bless her, but at the same time, inside herself, she is consumed by anxiety. This sense that the planet is in peril and she must do something, but whatever she does is never going to be enough. I looked it up, and so eco-anxiety, it's a thing.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing, and it's a growing thing. So listeners out there, both of you, the chances are, whether you know it or not, you have eco-anxiety. But if there is any good news, it is that you are not alone.
I think I'm on the spectrum.
Of
anxiety.
Well, there is a spectrum, I think. And
of course there should be. I mean, like, it can't be like anxiety or not. I think I'm sliding into kind of like that kind of thing.
So
I've started to separate my trash quite,
okay, can I say something that makes me quite angry? So I lived in New York for a while, and it was the law that you had to recycle. The landlord would go crazy if you didn't, right? If you, like, accidentally put the plastic thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And recently, the news came out that their trash is coming to us.
Yeah.
And that makes me so angry.
I know.
As
a Malaysian, I think it hits us hardest. What is the point of the plastic recycling? It was just going to come here anyway and just be burnt on a pile.
Well, I think it was the businesses that were started up to take advantage of the eco-anxiety in those parts of the world. So these people from our part of the world went to them and said, we'll get rid of your trash for you if you'll give us money. And I think that's how it started.
Okay, there's a Malaysian businessman for all occasions.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about the anxiety itself then. So Vernon, when you're doing this recycling thing, and you told me earlier you're even thinking about going vegan.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you carry thinking in yourself vegan. on a daily basis a sense of anxiety, a concern?
Well, every time I kind of like have a pile of rubbish sitting there, I feel I need to go through it and separate the organic matter from the matter that isn't organic.
And do you think that you're achieving something?
You see, this is the thing. It's such a small drop in the ocean. But I guess if we all do it, then some difference can be made.
Well, no, you just got to put on a Malaysian landfill.
I know, but, you know, I don't know. I just feel that
you gotta do
I
something.
Need to do it. Yeah.
Farah, where are you on the spectrum?
Well, I'm pretty anxious about life in general. So, yes, I think about recycling. I try and make an effort. But also I feel, what's the point sometimes if it's... Yeah, that's horrible for me to say. Yes, every little thing matters, but it's very difficult to where do you cross, where do you draw the line, right? up until it's not convenient, up until how much effort do you want to put into saving the world? And I don't know. So well, it really depends on what day it is. And
I mean, for me, the way I look at it is my organic matter becomes compost.
Mm.
And so for my potted plants, so then I think, okay, I don't need to spend so much money on fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to work it out in my mind.
Yes, but what if you're like
stuff.
What if you're like my friend who she's doing that, but she's thinking, yes, but my neighbor's not doing it.
Mm.
Okay.
And you're lying in bed at night, consumed by the panic sense that the whole street is not doing what I'm doing.
Well, the best way to deal with your anxiety is to face it up. Face up to it and try to find some way to turn it into a drive. You know, like she could run little workshops among her neighbors, you know, to tell them.
Yeah, press gang them.
But it's
three in the morning, bang, I'm running a workshop right now.
Composting. But how responsible is each individual, right? Because obviously your friend feels responsible for the earth, that her street needs to do the same thing. And yeah, but that's so stressful.
This is the thing. I mean, like, when you're on a mission, the best way to move forward is to find other like-minded souls to join you.
That I think is a potential solution to the mental health issue, and not necessarily to the saving of the planet per se. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that has been noted with the eco-anxiety is a sense of isolation. That people are thinking, as my friend would be, that the neighbors are not doing it, but also thinking, I'm the only one who seems to care. Even if I know other people who care, what can we do? But if you do find, if you can go and find a community, and you're doing a focused thing.
Yeah, together,
which could be, I don't know, plastics drive or save the whales or what have you. But if you are doing something, but you will always carry the sense that it's not going to achieve anything. It won't do a damn thing.
No,
because at the end of the day, we have been painted into a corner by somebody else, in that the petrochemical industries dominate the scene. What can we do compared to Shell Oil, ExxonMobil?
And you, as a single person or as a small group, can't. But if you galvanize with love,
I'm sure we make a dent. It will make a difference. I have to believe it.
Yes.
How else?
I mean, remember before May 9th last year, we all didn't think it was possible,
okay,
right?
Fair enough.
Yeah,
so there is a movement.
We all galvanized. We had Bursay there, and, you know.
Well, there is a movement amongst young people, which was sort of like created by this, I think, Swedish girl, Thunberg.
Yep.
And she's very young. And she wants to, as she has said, it's, I don't want you to have hope. I want you to feel panic.
Mm.
And young people are feeling the panic, younger than us. Are feeling the panic because they're the ones who are going to live in this world. But also young people have that kind of Farrani style optimism.
And naivete,
a sense that can be done. So they are coming together and they are marching, and I think it's fantastic.
Don't underestimate naivete.
No, absolutely. But it does wear off. It does wear off.
But I must say that I have kind of, not lost interest, but I've lost a bit of hope when I found out that Malaysia is coming and taking all the rubbish. No. Because you think that you're doing good and you are vigilant.
No, but you shouldn't lose hope because, what's her name? You'll be in.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah.
She's the best.
She's our Joan of Arc. Come on,
man.
She should inspire you.
Yeah. She does. But still, it's still there is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know,
because,
but where would it go now?
Yes, exactly.
Where would it go now?
What is the solution?
It's going back to those countries. Yeah.
Right,
yeah, but what happened to the plastic?
It's the plastic that's the issue. It doesn't matter if it came from Canada.
Well, she can't do anything with it because it's just sitting there.
Yeah.
So may as well relocate it.
So therefore, that is another though. Precisely. In terms of psychological responses, that is another one, which is to send it away.
Not my problem.
So, I mean, it's been noted that a lot of the responses to this situation fall on the spectrum, as you say, from the radical anger through to what I think I have, which is a fatalism. And inside that spectrum, there are other things. And I would say that sending them away is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But another one is even people who I think who are climate deniers are also responding psychologically to the situation because they know that climate change is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows it. So you just see it. But denial is
a response, a way people deal with it.
A way that people deal. This is how I respond to my personal finances situation is denial. And denial has served me well. So I think in a way, climate deniers need to be spoken to in such a way that, yeah, come on, guys, we all know it's happening. And you're in denial.
Well, that's happening, I'm sure.
I don't know. Sure. That is not the response that generally we say to the climate deniers. It's like, look at the science, look at the science. It's like, they know the science. Everyone knows about it.
Well, that's the first thing we say. But I'm sure there are other things happening, other people bringing in different kinds of strategies to deal with those other parties that are harder to kind of like, you know, change their minds. So give it some time. I mean, like, we need to have hope and we need to have optimism when it comes to all these things, or may as well just roll over and die.
Die.
What's wrong with that? That's a good response. But that is a perfectly legitimate response, is it?
To roll over and die. But I mean, but I think what we said earlier about how finding a community, right?
That is.
Come on, Cam, you can do it.
No, I think that that is something you can do, and I think that it would benefit you on so many other fronts anyway, personally.
Mm-hmm, yep.
That if you do find yourself in a sense of anxiety about anything,
yep,
go
to reach out.
To reach out, exactly, yep. And go create or find a community of like-minded people, mm-hmm, work together to try and find a solution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. In any
given situation,
yeah, yeah,
where there's a problem.
Wow. Yeah. So, we've solved climate change.
We've solved that, yeah.
Congratulations, sis. Pat on the backs all around.
I knew we could
feeling
do
better, Cam.
Get a good night's sleep.
And so we move on anyway. Now, to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something we think might be of interest. And Farah is going to go first.
Oh, goodness. I would say watch the match later today.
Wow.
No,
what if it's already happened?
Yeah, that's true. Then I would recommend this show by this brilliant writer named Phoebe Waller-Bridge. The show is called Fleabag. The second season just came out on Amazon Prime. It's very good.
Yeah. Parental guidance.
Yeah. Oh, you've seen it. Yeah. Sorry. Please, we'll move over.
It's a British it's rude.
It's rude. Ooh. But so it was originally a one woman show, which got picked up into a TV show. But it's
What is it called again?
Fleabag.
I think it's a very honest depiction of, I don't know, women
in their 30s.
And it's like, it's all those dark.
And you would know that, right?
No, but I've known a lot of women over the years. And there is one story that we all want to portray a story about ourselves. But we all know that there's another story behind the scenes. And I think that Fleabag really is talking about
being. Okay. Well,
but I love it because you can see the theatre origins.
Mm.
I look forward to seeing it.
What's her name again? What's her name?
Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It's like the whitest name ever.
But she's one to look out for.
Yeah, she also wrote Killing Eve, which is the Sandra Oh.
She wrote that.
She wrote that too. Goodness. She's very good.
She's one to look out for.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so that's Fleabag and Vernon.
Well, I want to recommend a visit to a venue that I stumbled into last weekend, and I thought, wow, this is interesting. It's actually a pub club kind of thing, and it's called RMIT Friends.
Ooh.
It's in Cheras, and the thing about it is that it's a subculture of East Malaysians, Sabah and Sarawak. Okay, so you walk into this place, it's not stylish or anything, it's very basic, but the vibe there is wonderful. Okay, the songs are mainly in Malay. And you've got all these kids kind of like having great fun.
There's a karaoke thing
there's
as well,
a karaoke,
right?
Yes. There's a karaoke, then there's a DJ, and then there's a band. And the band starts to play at 2:30 a.m. in the morning because it caters to East Malaysian youth who are working here and who finish work at midnight. So I thought it was such a find because it is like nothing I'd ever been to in Kuala Lumpur.
Oh, you know, I shot a film there, so I know it.
Okay,
because it was the last scene, so we partied there to six in the morning. It was the best. It was the most random and such a rare find.
And the thing about it is that the people are really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no aggro, no, you know, you don't feel that kind of. It was a wonderful, I don't know, homey kind of
post-work community kind of,
And it's all East Malaysians of every kind of tribe you can think of.
So you Farah, I can
attest to this. I can verify that. Mm. Yeah, and it's amazing because I felt like I was somewhere else. I felt like I was in Sabah Sarawak. I felt like I was in KL.
It reminded me of Kathmandu. I don't know why, but it had that kind of feel. where the people are really nice. The local Kathmandu kind of like, you know.
So where is this again? What's it called again?
It's called RMIT Friends. RMIT, which is where? Apparently a Sabahan or Sarawakian word.
They cheers, is it RMIT?
Yeah, yeah, correct.
RMIT.
Yeah. It's on the main drag.
Main drag of Cheras, where, sorry? Of,
is it Lokyu? Further up. Oh, just Google it. Okay. RMIT, where is it?
RMIT.
A-R-A-M-I-T.
A-I-T.
A-R-A-R-I-T-I.
RMIT.
Spell it one more time.
A-R-A-M-A-T-I. I think E.
You lost me.
RMIT.
Okay, folks. I hope you're podcasting this one. Just replay it several times. You'll get it eventually. Okay. Oh, that sounds.
Yeah, let's all go tonight.
Way past my bedtime. So my recommendation is, this is a crazy one. Actually, it's a crazy one. I recently bought a table from IKEA.
Oh.
and it arrived yesterday, and I actually put it together myself.
Well done.
Thank you. I dashed out and I bought a power drill.
Wow.
Yeah. And I said to the guy, I asked the guy at the shop, you know, do you think I can buy a power drill? And he says, really? You sure? You? Anyway, so I bought one anyway.
Which cost more than the table, I'm sure.
No, it was one of those cordless ones. Okay. And because I wanted a new desk. It didn't cost much.
What happened to the old one?
Well, the older one's there. But I felt like I needed to work on a new desk in a new spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only been one day, but I'm incredibly galvanized and excited by this new desk.
That's incredible.
And the smell of
pine.
Well, actually, it's the smell of new IKEA product. It's still got that.
It's a very specific smell. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
It's still got that. So my recommendation is not necessarily go off to IKEA, but I feel like if you do find yourself perhaps stuck in a rut, and if you do feel that you need...
Purpose.
A change. I think that if your work actually involves sitting down at a desk or whatever, I think just moving to a different spot with different accessories and stuff. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds like really cosmetic, but I think it can kind of break a cycle.
Do you have a different view as well for this new table?
A very different view. But also, the view becomes, I can't work there after, say, 8:30 in the morning because the sunlight gets too damn hot. So I get up really early and I work up until then.
That's a really good recommendation.
Yeah? Mm.
What, to change your furniture?
To change when you're in a rut, to change
the cycle of it.
Change the cycle of it.
Like they say when women break up, the first thing they do is they go and have a new haircut.
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's like that.
So that's exactly the same thing.
Yeah. So it's only been one day, and check up with me in a month, and that desk will just be like covered in stuff and forgotten about. So that brings us to the end of this week's show, and for me to thank special honored guest Farah Rani.
Thank you, Cam.
And Malisha Bole with the hockey team. And listeners, you will know by the time this comes out what the result is.
Yeah.
And Vernon Adrian Among.
Thank you for having me again.
And myself, Cam Ruslan. And so, I don't know, I'm contractually obliged to say like our Facebook page.
Contractually obliged.
Apparently. Or send money.
Yeah. I don't do Facebook much these days, but you do, Vernon.
I sure do, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's my social life.
And especially if you are out there and you are a Sarani and you're feeling alone, go check out Vernon's...
Poke me. Except you can't poke anymore on Facebook.
Yeah, but go check out his Facebook.
Oh, that's gone already. Yeah. The poking's gone.
Yeah. The poking's gone.
And so join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.